You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Stay tuned for the Heartland Labor Forum, radio that talks back to the boss.
March can be won, can be won. Many stones can form an arch, singly done, singly done. And by union, what we will can be accomplished still. Drops of water turn a mill, singly done, singly done.
Welcome to the Heartland Labor Forum, a weekly show of news, information, and commentary by and for the working people of Kansas City. This show is produced by a team of volunteers from a broad range of workplaces and unions. The views expressed on the Heartland Labor Forum are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any unions involved. And welcome again to the Heartland Labor Forum. I'm Judy Ansel. Tonight's show is being underwritten by Blake and Ulig, PA, United Steelworkers District 11. Since 1972, Blake and Ulig has prided itself on providing comprehensive legal representation to labor organizations and their affiliated benefit funds on a local, regional, and national basis. And United Steelworkers District 11, representing 35,000 members in the Midwest, protecting worker rights and organizing the unorganized. We support union-made products, and we thank both of our underwriters for their support. On tonight's show, why is it so hard for workers to win unions? We'll have CWA organizer Jeff Hayes to debunk many of the anti-union lies that bosses tell their workers and explain what's in it for workers to unionize. Then, the Area Transportation Authority is facing many post-COVID challenges, a shortage of drivers, declining ridership, late buses, and violence against drivers. We'll talk to Local 1287 Union President Will Howard to get the employee's point of view. In the news, University of Missouri to cut leave benefits for thousands of employees, and United Mine Workers blast NLRB for outrageous claims against Warrior Met and the Warrior Met strikers. Our feature at the end of the show is Remember Our Struggle with Ariana, and she's going to talk about the Great Southwest Rail Strike, totally appropriate for perhaps an upcoming rail strike. Now for the news.
The United Auto Worker Convention made some landmark changes in what the UAWD caucus might dub creeping toward democracy. Most significant were the many floor debates instituted by them to change long-standing practices. Strike pay on the first week of a strike was voted in, and it was also boosted to $400 a week. A big priority of UAWD was to pass a resolution banning negotiation of two-tier or multiple-tier agreements in which some workers make less or have fewer benefits than others. This has been a common divide-and-conquer tactic of the big three auto companies for almost 40 years. While it was debated, it was voted down. There was also campaign finance reform for candidates for the campaigns for the top for the union's top officers. Individual donations will be capped at $2,000 from 2026 on. For more on the convention, go to labornotes.org.
For 16 months, the Heartland Labor Forum has been covering the Warrior Met coal strike in Alabama, where workers struck rather than accept draconian concessions from the voracious private equity firm Blackstone that owns the company. Now they've been hit with a judgment for damages from Region 10 of the National Labor Relations Board. After the union was charged with some illegal picket line activity, it entered into a settlement agreement in June with the NLRB. It did so in order to save striking members and families from days of hostile questioning by company lawyers. On July 22nd, the NLRB sent the union a detailed list of damages totaling $13.3 million, more than 33 times the estimated amount NLRB lawyers had initially indicated would be assessed. Cecil Roberts, president of the United Mine Workers Union, reacted saying, "I want to be clear, Warrior Met Coal instigated this strike and has brutally extended it through its sustained unwillingness to reach a fair and reasonable agreement at the bargaining table. Apparently, the NLRB is charging the union for all of Warrior Met's losses for the 16 months of the strike and even before." Roberts said, "There are charges for security, cameras, capital expenditures, buses for transporting scabs across picket lines, and the cost of lost production. What is the purpose of a strike if not to impact the operations of the employer, including production?" He asked, "Is it now the policy of the federal government that unions be required to pay a company's losses as a consequence of their members exercising their rights as working people? This is outrageous and effectively negates workers' right to strike. It cannot stand." Roberts continues, "We have no intention of paying. The right to strike in America must be preserved. We will fight this at every level, in every court. We will spend every penny of our resources rather than give it to something like this from the NLRB, Warrior Met, or any other entity."
Amidst all the bad news from Texas, here's some good. The city of San Antonio is building a labor plaza honoring men and women who made significant contributions to the working people in Texas. The whole idea for this started when a crumbling statue of Sam Gompers, founder of the AFL, that needed to be torn down. The former national AFL-CIO vice president, Linda Chavez Thompson, told the mayor that they could not just tear it down, they needed to replace it with something else that is a labor monument. The mayor agreed, and the city of San Antonio is funding the Labor Plaza, which will be right in front of Hyatt Place San Antonio River Walk. There will be 10 pillars honoring 10 labor leaders. One of those leaders to be honored is Joan Suarez from the Amalgamated Clothing and Textile Workers Union, where she was the organizer of the landmark Farrah Pants Strike, along with her husband Joe Suarez. The strike lasted 22 months from 1972 to 1974. It involved thousands of Chicana workers at Farrah, the largest producer of men's and boys' pants in the nation. The women organized a union in the face of sweatshop conditions, and after 2 years, they won. Later, Joan became the first woman to lead San Antonio Labor Council from 82 to 1987. If that wasn't enough, after Joan retired to her native St. Louis, she became both a patron of labor arts and a key leader in St. Louis Jobs with Justice and formed MIRA, Missouri Immigration and Refugee Advocates. Joan quipped about being one of the 10 pillars in the new San Antonio Labor Plaza, "I never thought I'd get a tombstone before I die."
13,000 staff members at the University of Missouri campus and the hospital in Columbia, as well as many of the campuses around the state, will each lose about 10 days of leave each year if a proposal cooked up by the UM administrators, allegedly to both save money and help with retention and recruitment, is passed by the Board of Curators. LIUNA Local 955, which represents food service workers, custodians, groundskeepers, maintenance workers, and construction workers on the MU and UMKC campuses, is sounding the alarm and collecting signatures on a petition with Missouri Jobs with Justice. The university has said that once they make these changes, cutting leave, they can use the savings to implement parental leave and short-term disability leave, but they have not revealed any concrete plan for these benefits. There's also no concrete plan on what will happen to the accrued leave many employees have. Andrew Hutchinson, Local 955's public employee field rep, said the proposed change is drastic and the administration doesn't appear to think it needs to negotiate it with the union. The weakness of Missouri public sector law has meant that in several instances, the university simply stonewalls its workers when they try to organize. Hutchinson said, the university is struggling to retain and recruit staff. Cutting benefits will only harm our public universities. We need to increase worker pay and benefits, not cut them. Recently, Hutchinson was told that as a union rep, he has no right to enter break rooms on campuses to talk to his members or to speak at grievances, even though their labor agreement allows for this. He said, referring to UM administrators, they are both evil and incompetent, and we think they win a Union Buster Award. The petition from MU workers and the public will be turned in today. Then it's up to the Board of Curators. If listeners want to let the curators know what you think of this, you can email them at boardofcurators@umsystem.edu. That's the news from our side. The news tonight was read by Tom Gepkin, Stephen Hill, Judy Morgan, and I'm Judy Ansel.
Well, I was thumbing through my wallet just the other day, and I came to a certain place, and I could have sworn I heard someone say, howdy, I'm your union card. Now, don't you forget about me. Listen to the story and just see if you don't agree. Now, you may not know it, but I do a lot for you. I protect your benefits and all your wages, too. I might even keep you from getting fired. Hey, praise the Lord that I'm a union card. Praise the Lord that I'm a union card. Could have been the Visa, could have been the MasterCard. Don't worry about your money long as I'm on guard. Just praise the Lord that I'm a union card.
I'm Tom Gepkin. I'm president of CWA 6360. And this is our labor leader series with Judy Morgan, former state rep and president emeritus of AFT Local 691. Unions are more popular than they have been in a long time. A new generation of people working in traditionally non-union jobs have found being union is a better way than non-union. Organizing is happening in many fields and companies. Amazon, Google, Apple, airlines, school systems are just some of them. On tonight's show, we'll discuss this with Jeff Hayes. He is an organizer for the Communication Workers of America. He visits those that are interested in becoming union. He will dispel the anti-union myths and tell us why it's better for workers to be in the union. He is the former president of CWA Local 6360, and he is a friend of both Judy and myself. Jeff? Tonight, we want to welcome you to the Heartland Labor Forum.
Thanks for having me on.
Hi, Jeff. First question is going to be a two-part one.
Okay.
So first, there seems to be a resurgence in the popularity of unions. What do you think that's attributed to? And why do you think the more non-traditional segments are organizing?
Well, I think there are two big reasons for the resurgence of the unions. I think the first one is the political climate that we've been under the last few years. People have joined together to make changes out in the public, such as the Black Lives Matter. They've learned that if they all work together, that they can make the change that needs to be made. Secondly, I think the pandemic had a big impact on unionization due to the fact that people that were in those high exposure jobs didn't feel as safe, and their employers weren't really doing a good job of trying to protect them and keeping them safe in their jobs. So I think people have turned to the unions to try to get the help that they need to do that. And I think the non-traditional jobs that have not been unions, such as the tech jobs and that, are a big part of that pandemic, the pandemic problem that we have.
One thing I remember reading during the pandemic was that people in
a lot of times higher paid jobs were able to work from their homes, but those people in lower paid jobs had to show up at work. Do you think that kind of is part of the pandemic issue?
I believe so. Those lower paid jobs, you know, those frontline workers are a lot of the ones that are unionizing now, such as Tom said, the Amazon workers, the Starbucks workers. Those are frontline employees. Those are public facing employees, and their health and the risk of getting COVID was very high for all of them.
It kind of changed the definition of what an essential employee is, because many of the businesses and workers were never thought of as essential, but going through the pandemic, they really were essential. Would you discuss some of the recent successes CWA has had in organizing new bargaining units? Because the CWA is an organizing union, and they do a pretty good job of being active about that. So would you discuss it?
Sure. Within CWA District 6, which District 6 makes up a 5-state area, we've had several big successes of late. There was a group of 600 people with a company called Integral Care out of Austin, Texas. They are in the healthcare field down there. They just recently did unionize, was able to get the company actually recognized them voluntarily. So they are currently working on a contract. Here, kind of locally, we have the Lawrence School District. We represent the paraprofessionals and the hourly staff. There's about 525 people within that school district. It's called CWA/PALS. PALS was a group that tried to organize on their own as an independent union, and with very little success due to the fact that the school district would not recognize them as a union. So they teamed up last year or 2 years ago with CWA. We've been out there, we've organized. And like I said, they are now on their second, they have yearly contracts. And so they're now on their second contract. That one too is the largest public sector successful union campaign in the state of Kansas in over 20 years. So we're very proud of that campaign. There's a group called Las Americas out of El Paso that is getting ready to go public this week. Dish Network in Texas. We negotiated for almost 15 years to get a contract for the Dish employees in Texas. And they successfully got one earlier this year. And then
after 15 years, Jeff, did you say?
After 15 years, we were able to keep those employees together and fighting against the company to get a contract in place for them. And then nationally, a big one that we just recently had was the video game. I believe it's called Activision out of Wisconsin. They're the programming people that basically write and make the games up. And they just recently have signed on with CWA. We, on average, get just in District 6, we get 30 to 50 inquiries a month of different groups that are wanting to unionize their company right now, just because of the, sometimes it's the pay. Sometimes it's the way they're being treated. There is all kinds of reasons out there right now on why people are wanting to organize.
Do you personally take part in those contracts and organizing efforts? Is that part of your job?
I am. Well, first of all, my job is called a campaign lead, and half of my time is spent with organizing. And the other half during the sessions is involved with the politics in Missouri and Kansas. I do participate, and I will run the initial calls for people that put in inquiries. I will help them build an organizing committee. We will help them through the process. And yeah, I'm there. I do not negotiate the contract. That's another job duty that I luckily don't have to do. But yeah, so I'm there from beginning to almost to the end.
Let's talk some about the good things unions do, the benefits of unions. You know, Tom and you and I are all three people who certainly, I think, would agree unions have done us a lot of good in our own lives and a lot of the people we know. So let's start off with the whole idea of union workers make higher wages than non-union workers.
Yeah, and you know, that is true. Union workers make on average about 20% more than non-union workers out there. I believe having the contract in place and giving those workers an opportunity to get raises on a consistent basis rather than waiting for their boss or their supervisor or whoever to decide, oh yeah, we probably better give these people raises because we're losing so many people. So that is true. They do have better wages. And they also bring up the wages for those non-union members out there. Some of these companies that we represent are hiring at a higher rate, which makes the non-union companies have to hire at a higher rate.
Kind of sets the standard.
Correct.
This is a well-known fact that union workers have better benefits than non-union workers. Would you talk about that?
And it is true. I think that is another reason with a contract in place, you know, we're able to work with the company to try to get the better benefits. A lot of the companies with union contracts have pensions. A lot have 401ks on top of the pensions. Their health insurance seems to be better and cheaper. That's
work
just
rules.
Work rules. Yeah, the work rules seem to be put in place. And you know, those work rules work for both the employee and the management. That kind of gives the running rules for management of what they need to do in the workplace and what they can't do in the workplace.
Teacher, I had health insurance from day one, but actually my AFT had just recently negotiated that when I came on board. That was many years ago, but I just can't imagine being without health insurance. That's such an important thing. And I think so many non-union workers don't necessarily have it. So you're right about the health insurance. That's a big deal.
Or if they do have it offered, it's unaffordable. There's a lot of naysayers out there. I know we all fought real hard against right to work in 2018. We were knocking on doors. All of us went door to door and talked to people. And every now and then you'd come across an anti-union person. So on this portion of the discussion, we're going to dispel some of the myths that the non-union or the people who do not like unions always seem to pull out of their back pocket. So let's dispel some of them. Jeff, unions only help the lazy.
Well, and that is true. We do help the lazy, but we also help the model employee. It seems that it's not just those lazy employees that seem to get themselves in trouble. We're helping them with their wages. We're helping them with their benefits, like we've already talked about. But we're also representing them. So if they were a model employee and got written up and got themselves in trouble for one reason or another, we're there to help them as well to keep their job and keep their livelihood safe.
You know, one thing I always felt when I was president of the teachers union, it's like management didn't always want to go through the process to deal with an employee who wasn't doing their job. They just wanted to fire them. And it never made sense to me, because all you have to do is, you know, you go through the process. And if the person isn't doing their job, ultimately management will be able to prove the case. The union is just there to make sure that management does not violate any of those policies or the rights of the employees. That's kind of the way I always looked at it.
Right.
One thing, being a union member in a union company, you have just cause as opposed to being an at-will employee.
That is right. And most of that is usually written into the contract that is negotiated.
I think another benefit that I always appreciated as a union member is I really felt like the union gave me a voice on the job. you know, I could have some say-so about what was going to be, you know, I could give suggestions on what would be negotiated and that kind of thing. And that was something that was always important to me as a union member.
Very much so.
Unions put up a wall between friendly management that's always looking out for you and the employee.
I don't believe that. Being a representative at CWA and at AT&T, we had a lot of friendly managers out there to their techs, and they were just as friendly to the union as they were the technicians. You know, we work to have a good relationship with the management. We're not the thugs out there trying to beat down the door and to make the huge changes. We want everybody to work every day, bring home a good living, make a good life for their family. We're not out there to cause problems between them and their management team.
Yeah, union members want the company to be successful.
Absolutely. The more successful the company is, the more successful our members are. And I think that is huge. We are not there to close a company down. We're there to try to make them as successful as possible.
Our good friend Herb Johnson always said, you know, why would we want the company to not be successful since they're the ones paying our wages? We want them to be able to go on paying the wages, providing health insurance. So we want our companies to be successful. Let's talk a little bit more about what you brought up about union. Unions sometimes are talked about like a bunch of thugs run them, and they only care about getting your dues money, and they really don't care about you as the person or the union member. Talk about that, Jeff.
Well, you know, and it's true. The unions do want your dues money. That's what keeps us afloat. I mean, we're a business just like anybody else. So without that dues money coming in, we wouldn't be able to do the representation. We wouldn't be able to afford to do the organizing, to organize other companies. You know, we wouldn't be able to do all those things that we do on the backside. As far as being thugs, I will tell you that with the density as low as union density is right now, it's hard to be a thug. We're out there trying to be friends, trying to respect our members. Let me tell you a real quick story. I was out on an organizing campaign today, and I had a lady that told me, yeah, I don't think I can be part of the union because unions fireball people's houses. They break people's windshields. They do all this kind of stuff. And I said, yeah, you know, maybe back in the day, maybe the unions did that kind of stuff. But nowadays, we treat our members with respect. We treat most of the companies that we deal with respect in order to get that respect in return. So it's not a real union thug organization any longer.
I know all the union folks I met during my tenure were, I just thought, great people, nice people, you know, easy to work with. So I agree with you.
And if you look at all the work that unions do within the community through United Way, through fundraising for different organizations, we're out there trying to help everybody.
They are good stewards of the community. We only have about a minute left. So I know that when we all were working hard, like I discussed before in 2018, to push back Right to Work, you're working in District 6, which is Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Kansas, and Missouri. And Missouri is the only not right to work state. And as unions are working in these right to work states, they have to represent the non-members. If the non-member files a grievance, it has to be worked. You want to talk about that for what the little time we have left?
Well, that's just the way the law is written. We do have to represent those members. We would like them to contribute to that representation through their dues money. Being a right to work state like Kansas, they don't have to do that. A lot of times though, when they do file a grievance and we argue and fight for them and get that grievance won, a lot of times they will come back and they will become a member because they've seen what we've done for them.
Thank you, Jeff Hayes, the former president, local president of CWA 6360, now working for your international as CWA Missouri organizer. We really appreciated you being on the Heartland Labor Forum this evening to talk about unions and the benefits of union membership. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on.
KKFI will celebrate National Radio Day on Saturday, August 20th. By recognizing one of the first forms of electronic communication, KKFI continues to broadcast to help break down barriers and build a strong voice based in the heart of America. We will highlight the best that radio can offer with our amazing Saturday programmers. They will share the songs and the stories of why radio is the strongest format of participating in the human race. Join us Saturday, August 20th in celebration of National Radio Day.
The KKFI two-week archive is available online for your listening pleasure. Check out any show from the past 2 weeks by navigating your web browser to archive.kkfi.org.
Welcome back to the Heartland Labor Forum. This part of the is part of our series called Labor Leader Series. A large selection of Kansas City rely on city buses to get to and from work. They use the bus to shop, to go to medical appointments, and many other places. With the price of fuel, many more would gladly move around the city bus if the system were more available in the entire metro area. Judy Morgan and myself are happy to have Will Howard. He's president of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1287. He was elected to that position in December of 2020. President Howard has been in part of this local since he started 17 years ago. We'll discuss his journey over these years to take him to the helm of Local 1287. He lives in the area with his wife and children. Will, we want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
Hi, Will. I'm going to ask the first question tonight.
Okay.
And we would like to know, I think our audience would be very interested in what motivated you to become involved in your union to begin with, and then what made you interested in running for office in your local?
One thing that made me interested in becoming more active is that once you know that people are being taken advantage of or doing wrong, and you don't say anything, you're part of the problem. And, you know, I started noticing, you know, a lot of the things wasn't being right on the board. It wasn't, you know, putting the work out the way it's supposed to, the way the contract, you know, kind of said it should be. And I started kind of taking the lead, you know, with the management team, saying, hey, you know, you're not doing it by the contract and making a big deal about it. And, you know, one thing it is you don't want people who's not going to be around to make decisions for you if you have to work through it. So it made me want to get involved. It made me want to, you know, run for office because I didn't want someone making decisions for me if they weren't going to be here to work side by side with me to go through the same things that I've been going through.
So did you run for office besides president along the way? Did you kind of come up through the ranks running for other offices?
Well, I ran for the executive board. I lost by 4 votes. I ran for the vice president spot. I lost by 50 votes to the vice president, who had, you know, been there 26 years doing that position. But when I ran for president, I ran unopposed, which, you know, it shocked me. But, you know, I accepted the challenge, and I'm up to do what I have to do for the membership.
We all see city buses every day, everywhere we go, but we don't really think about the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And will you tell us about your local? How many members do you have, and what is the work that they do?
Right now, we're at about 603 members, which we're down because of COVID. You know, the numbers have, you know, people have retired and things of this nature. But down here at KCATA, we represent the bus operators, the maintenance staff, and also the clerical workers who work down at KCATA.
So do they each have their own contract that you have to negotiate?
No, we have one contract. We do have a separate contract with some of the call center who do some work up there for Share Fair. They have a separate contract outside of ours, but it's basically the same.
And you know, the Area Transportation Authority, is it a city agency, and do the National Labor Relations Board rules apply to your union, or are you more like a public sector union?
Yes, we're public sector, so that those rules really don't apply to us. But they do apply to our members that we represent out in Johnson County.
Okay, who do you represent in Johnson County?
The Johnson County bus operators, who are part of the Ride KC, but they are a private entity because they're First Transit instead of KCATA.
So do you see any difference between when you're representing the ones represented by a private entity as opposed to the rest of your members who are represented like they're a public union? Because I know public unions don't always have the same, having been a, you know, a member of a public employee union myself, we don't have the same rights as private employee unions.
And that's correct. You don't have the same rights. You don't get the same benefits, the same pay. And that's the big difference, you know, between private and the public transit. And you also can tell also with the discipline, because over in the private sector, they're a little more strict. And sometimes it's hard to win cases over there on the private sector because, you know, the rules are a lot different, especially on the Kansas side, because of their right to work.
Okay, right.
The one in Kansas, is that a separate contract, or is that part of the master contract?
Now that, yeah, that contract there is separate because there's different rules, different language. Even though they are with Local 1287, they're not in the contract that we have with KCATA because they're with First Transit.
So they're a different bargaining unit?
Correct. Okay. But they're under Local 1287.
Right.
And so if it's right to work in Kansas, those employees aren't required to pay union dues.
Correct.
Just like as public employees, we can't enforce paying union dues.
Well, they did the same thing with us with Janus. And basically what that allows people to do is that they can come and work on a union job and not participate in the union dues, because what used to happen, if you didn't want to be in the union, you just paid a lesser amount. Now you don't have to pay anything.
Have you seen a difference in the number of people belonging to the union as a result of that Janus Supreme Court ruling? Are you still able to pretty much keep your membership, you know, involved and paying dues because they think it's the right thing to do to be part of the union?
Yes, definitely on the Missouri side, you know, we don't have the issues of people, you know, being in the union. People know that it's a union job. They want to be a part of it because it's their voice. You are your union. The members make the union.
Shifting gears a little bit, I have recently been reading in the paper that there is a shortage of bus drivers, and I've read some articles that discusses that bus drivers face some violence on their routes. Would you discuss that?
Yeah, unfortunately, that's some of the stuff that comes with being an operator. The last 2 months, we've had about 10 operators be assaulted, which is entirely too high. We expect none because we're just trying to serve the community. But that kind of discourages folks who want to be a bus operator. You know, the wages sometimes is not meeting up the expectation of what people are wanting to see. And then if you're not getting paid the amount of money that you would like, and then you're getting assaulted on the bus, well, that's not going to make it too appealing to people.
Well, during the period that we were, you know, had that COVID was so rampant, not that it's gone away, it hasn't, but, and people were required to wear masks on the buses for a while, right?
Yes.
Throughout the city. Did you see any problems with people not wanting to wear their masks when they got on the buses?
Oh, yes. That really triggered a lot of violence on the bus. People refusing to put their mask on, and then if the bus operator has to hold up the bus because you refuse, wait for a supervisor, well, you know, then things turn violent, verbally, physically sometimes.
And what kind of support do you have in terms of security for those bus drivers?
Right now we have two full-time KCPD officers, and we also have the Titan Security. But the problem of it is they're not on the buses. We would like to go to more of a system like out in D.C. and on the East Coast and have our own transit police. We want folks to be out there on the buses, especially some of the routes that we know we're having problems, to try to minimize this kind of thing on the bus, the violence.
Well, I can't imagine. Here you are having to be on a time schedule, I'm sure. The drivers are on a time schedule, and they have to be at a certain stop. And then here they have somebody being violent. They've got to stop and take time to deal with that person. That just is very that would be a very chaotic situation.
A lot of things people fail to realize about our bus operators. They have to wear many hats. You know, they have to be a pastor, deacon, a counselor, all these types of things. And then also the company requires you to give information to passengers on the bus, which can cause you to be distracted, as well as you know maneuvering a bus, you know, watching the road, watching traffic. I mean, it requires you to do an awful lot. So, you know, for someone to come and assault you and do different things while you're trying to provide a service for them, you know, it's almost a slap in the face.
And the bus riders are probably subject to the same thing, aren't they?
Oh, yes. We've had passengers assault each other. And, you know, that becomes very dangerous because, you know, we're not a police. We're not, you know, security. And we have to call for backup and wait for someone to arrive while these kind of incidents are going on.
And while that's going on, the buses stop. So now people are waiting longer at the stop, wondering where their bus is, thinking they missed it.
Of course so.
Tonight on the Heartland Labor Forum, we're talking to Will Howard, president of Local 1287, who represent the bus drivers here in Kansas City and some other places.
Will, I've noticed that since you've taken over 1287, your local and yourself, you've become really more active in the community and in the labor movement than 1287 previously was. I see you at meetings and I see you at different events. What direction would you like to take your local?
Well, we just want to, you know, be there, you know, like your major locals, you know, building and trade, these types of folks, and have those political connections, you know, with political folks here in town, because we know this is what it takes, especially with us receiving local funds and things of this nature. You have to be involved. We want to get more involved in doing more outreaches. I was there with Raina Parks at Swope Park doing the backpack thing. These are the things that we want to be more involved in, to be more of a voice in the community, and also provide more of a service than what we do every day as driving buses and cleaning bus shelters.
So this kind of goes into the next question, Will, which is how important is it for your members to have elect politicians, elect people who will actually be, you know, receptive to what your members need? And then are you planning on, have you been, and are you planning on continue to be active at the local, state, and national level in elections as a union?
Oh, yes, indeed. You know, elections matter. You have to get involved in the politics whether you want to or not, because these are the folks who are going to decide a lot of things that happen for you, especially with transit. You have the city council, you have the city manager, you know, a lot of people down in public works who are involved, and especially with us receiving 90% of our funds from Kansas City, Missouri, we have to build those relationships with those people, because you just can't come to folks with your problems and expect them to want to help you you have to build a relationship mm-hmm. and start working with those people where it's not more of gripes and concern. It's, hey, what can we do to help each other?
Mm-hmm. So do you find that in terms of negotiating your contract for the Kansas City bus drivers and the other people you represent, who do you actually negotiate with? Who's the one who calls the shots?
Well, we negotiate with KCATA. They have their own committee that they bring in. They negotiate with us directly. We normally bring in one of our international vice presidents, which we're doing this Monday. We're opening up our contract to wages again because they left a lot of money off the table for our union members. So we want to get those types of things, taken care of for our members. And just to put this out there, we're having a rally August the 15th from 8:43 to 9:30 at 18th and Forest. We want anyone who can come out and support us for the rally for wages to make sure that we make sure that this company is going to put up the right wages for our union members so that they can be taken care of so we can continue to provide world-class service for our community.
So you actually have to negotiate with basically a board that is appointed by... Who appoints that board that you have to negotiate with?
No, it's not the board. Okay. It's actually like the COO, of the vice presidents.
Okay.
And once we negotiate and we, come to an agreement, they have to get it approved by the board.
Okay. But ultimately, the board's the one that approves the contract
Correct.
For your members.
Yes.
Okay. Does the city then just provide the financing?
Yes.
So they don't really have much to do with your contract?
No. Okay. They're just the funding. With the half-cent sales tax, the 3/8-cent sales tax.
Okay.
This is how, we receive our funding through Kansas City, Missouri. But they have a contract with KCATA, and we have a contract with KCATA. So, KCATA is kind of like the middleman.
Okay.
The city is the money, we are the labor. And
mm-hmm.
so together, we all work together to try to provide service for the city of Kansas City, Missouri.
But it almost seems like to me you have to be working on so many different levels because you're working with the management, you're working with the board, but then you also have to probably lobby the city to get money. Is that right?
You have to work with everyone.
Yeah.
And so
you have a lot going on.
This is one of those things where you have to get involved. If you don't want to be into politics, running for office is not what you should do because you have to get involved. You have to, talk to your mayor. You have to talk mm-hmm. to your city manager. Mm-hmm. You have to talk to the mm-hmm. CEO. And somewhere you have to kind of find a way to, meet somewhere in the
mm-hmm.
middle
mm-hmm.
so no one feels like they're being beat. But unfortunately for us, we felt like the wages we got beat out of back in January. And so we want to go back and make sure that we get our folks down at KCATA who provide world-class service, our bus operators, our mechanics, our clerical folks, to make sure that they are being compensated the way they should for the services they provide for Kansas City, Missouri.
In the few minutes we have left, can you tell us real quick about your executive board and how helpful it is to have a good board helping you achieve the things you're looking for?
Without the executive board, we can't make any decisions. Those are, your top officers in every department who come together to say, hey, this is what we need to do to have a stronger union. And they bring it directly from the members to let us know what folks are asking for. And right now, it's competitive wages and incentives. And that's what we're asking for right now with KCATA. And once we made that decision, that's the way we go. But it takes a good board to make good decisions for your members that are by your members.
So tell us when that rally is again.
It's August the 15th from 8:45 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. at 18th and Forest, which is at the 18th and Forest, which is KCATA building right there out front.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks, Will. Sure appreciate you coming on and educating our audience about what you do and the people you help and the Kansas Cityans that you help. We really appreciate it.
I thank you for having me. Thank you.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Good evening and welcome to Remember Our Struggle. I'm Ariana Eckel. St. Louis, March 6th, 1886. A special from Sedalia, Missouri, to the Post-Dispatch says, the order for the general strike upon the Gould Southwestern system reached that place at 10:30 this morning, and every man in the Missouri Pacific shops put up his tools and walked out. The employees here number about 700. The men are determined to support to the end the demand of the Texas strikers. Everything is quiet, and no trouble of a violent nature is anticipated. The trains are running on time, and no effort has been made to interfere with them, except the carrying out of the boycott instituted against the Texas Pacific cars, which are sidetracked as soon as they reach this place. That was an excerpt from the St. Paul Daily Globe. The Great Southwest Strike, organized by the Knights of Labor in 1886, was one of the largest and most important clashes between management and organized labor in the 19th century. The conflict occurred only 1 year after the Knights of Labor won a successful strike against the Wabash Railroad, part of the Southwestern system controlled by railroad baron Jay Gould. The 1885 walkout tied up the entire Wabash line in the Southwest. The strike began after the railroad terminated Knights of Labor shopmen, and the union's members on other railways refused to operate any train with Wabash cars. The solidarity of the union men soon brought Gould to the conference table. According to the terms of a resulting agreement, Gould ceased to discriminate against the Knights, and Union President Terence V. Powderly called off the strike and pledged no further walkouts prior to union management discussions. This surprising and unprecedented union victory led to a major increase in the membership rolls of the Knights of Labor. In the year ending June 30, 1886, national membership increased from about 100,000 to over 700,000. The Dallas Morning News had claimed there were more than 30,000 members in Texas alone in 1885. In March 1886, master workman Martin Irons of the Knights District Assembly 101 called a strike against Gould's Texas and Pacific Railway after the firing of a foreman and marshal. The conflict rapidly spread to the other roads in the Southwest. Violence soon erupted after workers impeded railroad operation by uncoupling cars and seizing switch junctures. Gould hired scabs and Pinkerton detectives and requested military assistance from state governors. Texas Governor John Ireland sent both state militia and Texas Rangers to Buttermilk Switch in Fort Worth. Gould's apparent capitulation to the Knights in 1885 later appeared to be only a strategic retreat. Soon, he seemed determined to destroy the Union. Railroad management steadfastly refused any concessions, and public opinion, initially sympathetic to the Union, turned against the Knights after the onset of widespread violence. The appointment of a congressional committee to investigate the strike made little headway because of a combination of the union's lack of success in coping with the resolute railroad management, the shift of public opinion away from the union cause, and Powderly's decision that the strike was hopeless. The failure of the Great Southwest Strike represented the first major defeat sustained by the Knights of Labor and proved to be a fatal blow to their vision of an industrial union that would unite all railroad workers in the Southwest into one big union. Once again, an emerging labor organization was crushed when competing with powerful, determined, and well-organized industrialists in command of nationally based corporations. That was adapted from the Texas State Historical Society website. And I will close with part of an address put together by the executive boards of Assemblies 101, 93, and 17 of the Knights of Labor. To the working men of the world, friends and brothers, hear us, for we plead for our rights. Men of equity, look upon us, for we struggle against giants of wrong. Mad with the frenzy of pride and self-adulation, begotten, as it is, in the success of outrage and infamy, there stands before us a giant of aggregated and incorporated wealth, every dollar of which is built upon blood, injustice, and outrage. That giant of corporate wealth has centralized its power in, and is impersonated in the eager fiend who gloats as he grinds the life out of his fellow men, and grimaces and dances as they writhe upon his instruments of torture. O ye working men of America, who love your liberty and your native land, ye great creators of wealth, who stand as the foundation of all national good, look upon your brothers today. Gould, the giant fiend, Gould, the money monarch, is dancing, as he claims, over the grave of our order, over the ruin of our homes and the blight of our lives. Before him the world has smiled in beauty, but his wake is a graveyard of hopes, the Eilon's path of devastation and death. Our strong arms have grown weary in building the tower of strength, and yet he bids us build on or die. Our young lives have grown gray too soon beneath the strain of unrequited constant toil. Our loved ones at home are hollow-cheeked and pale with long and weary waiting for better days to come. Nay, more than this, the graveyards are hiding his victims from our longing eyes. Thank you for listening and have a good evening.
And I'm Judy Ansel with the Heartland Labor Forum calendar. You can find our calendar on our Facebook page. Just look at Heartland Labor Forum on Facebook. Vibrant Health is having a back-to-school bash this Saturday, August 13th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. That's going to be a lot of fun, plus school supplies, 4313 State Avenue, KCK. Solidarity rally to kick off ATU 1287 negotiations. That, of course, is the union you just heard about on the show. It's Monday morning at 8:45 a.m. at 18th and Forest in Kansas City, Missouri. That's where they're having their negotiations. Return of the KC Faith Labor Alliance with keynoter Pat Jones-Macklin is Thursday, August 18th at 7:30 a.m. Trinity United Methodist Church, 620 East Armor Boulevard in Kansas City, Missouri. It's sponsored by Missouri Jobs with Justice. And if you plan on going, you should RSVP to Missouri Jobs with Justice, Kansas City. Kansas City Freedom Fest, August 27th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. This is going to be at UAW Local 249 at 8040 U.S. 69 Highway in Pleasant Valley, and it is celebrating women's reproductive rights. This is an event that's sponsored by Planned Parenthood and the UAW. And save the date, Jobs with Justice Labor Day Picnic, Monday, September 5th on Labor Day, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., and it's going to be at the Swope Park Bandstand. That's it for tonight's show. Tune in next week. We're going to have a special guest, William Gould, who used to be, I think, general counsel for the NLRB under the Clinton administration. And he's a law professor at Stanford, and he's written a book called For Labor to Build Upon, Wars, Depression, Pandemic. And also, along with William Gould, we're going to have the Missouri Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO's, political organizer, Carson Pope. The Heartland Labor Forum is a member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. Check out the rich diversity of programming related to workers and unions at laborradionetwork.org. Thanks to tonight's engineer, Stephen Hill. And stay tuned for the Thursday night special, It's Shots in the Night.
Listening to the Heartland Labor Forum, a show by and about workers, our workplaces, and our labor movement. We are radio that talks back to the boss. And you can talk back to us, too. Send us your feedback, your workplace stories, news, and ideas for shows to Heartland Labor Forum, KKFI, at gmail.com. Our website, where we archive shows and post our upcoming ones, is heartlandlaborforum.org. The views expressed on this show are ours and not necessarily those of KKFI or any of the unions involved. Tune in every Thursday evening at 6 or to our rebroadcast Friday mornings at 5 right here, 90.1 FM.
We still got our pride, 'cause we are the working class, and that's the place to be.